You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers all the time. And today, we are going to continue on with our player season recap series. We'll say who in a second. As always, I am Tony East, one of the hosts of the show. I write about the Indiana Pacers for Forbes Sports Money. I kind of gave away the whole show at the beginning. Today is going to be a season recap for Tyreek Evans. So usually with these, the ending segment is looking ahead. That way we can tie in a bit of what happened this past season and talk about actual basketball, as well as tie in some free agency stuff and look ahead. However, Tyreek Evans is suspended from the NBA for two seasons, so that's the whole future section right there. Just knock that out in one sentence. So hopefully he is you know, on the path to recovery or figuring out whatever happened with him. I hope everything is well for him and his family. But we have a full section to fill today. Conveniently, on Twitter today, we got some nice intel from the mighty Shams Charania of The Athletic / Stadium. However, all the info was on The Athletic about free agency. And D'Angelo Russell specifically was mentioned. And the suitors for him were the Orlando Magic, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the missing one. Crap. I should remember this, but I can't. The Pacers were one of the four teams besides the Magic and Timberwolves, and I can't remember the other one. Anyway, Noah Smith, who requested a question last week, wanted me to talk about D'Lo, so I will. And I have needed to for a while because I have some thoughts, although I have recently warmed up on D'Lo, so this will be fun. But we got to do Tyreek first, and we're starting with the good. And most of you who listen know, this is going to be kind of awkward. Most of you know that I was actually kind of a bit higher on Tyreek's contributions this season than most. Not that I thought he was good. I still think he was a negative player. But people were talking about benching him for Aaron Holiday, and I did not think that was smart. I think Tyreek ended up shooting better from the field than Aaron, which is crazy to think about. And Tyreek's actually an okay defender to me at 6'6", and he just is a veteran who understands the game. So if their goal was to win games, I think Tyreek should have played now. If their goal was to develop, and you can argue whether what their goal should have been, then yeah, they should have played Aaron if that was the case. But given that their goals were to win and try to win in the playoffs, I think Tyreek was the right guy. So I just spoiled one of the things I like about Tyreek and what he did this season. So I'll talk about his defense first. And a lot of it because comes from his size. He's 6'6", 220. So he's like a thin-framed 6'6", but he's still bulky-ish if you look at him. He doesn't look like a tiny guy or anything like that, which is super interesting. And he's not slow. He's a quick enough guy. So he can stay in front of his matchup most of the time. I think he's kind of a lazy off-ball defender, but he's a pretty solid on-ball defender, and that made him useful in that second unit. It helped bail out a little bit of Sabonis' flaws. It made him a good fit next to Corey Joseph. They could kind of stifle whatever was going on with the other team's second unit guards. It led to some transition opportunities, which Lord knows he specifically didn't finish, but that he was able to, you know, help the team get going on the break. I really did like his defense when he had to guard the ball handler, and you can do worse than having a 6'6 quick guy who, you know, understands how to be in front of his man well. And, you know, being good at man-to-man defense versus team defense is kind of emblematic of the way Tyreek plays in general. You know, he had that street ball growing up vibe in Philadelphia, where, you know, everybody's good as an on-ball defender because of the way those games are played with the grit. And the grit's like a weird way to describe it, but, you know, it's a lot more personal. You're dedicated to shutting down your guy, stuff like that. I think he learned a lot from those days, and he's an NBA player, so clearly it worked. But yeah, I actually enjoyed the things he brought to the table on the defensive end. Now, offense. that's mean to say. He's not a terrible offensive player. And I do think we didn't put enough value on him being able to get to the rim, especially on that second unit where Corey Joseph would dribble 100 times and create no space no matter who was guarding him. It could have been me, and he'd have dribbled in circles and then thrown up a 15-foot floater. You know, Tyreek, downhill straight to the rim. Now, in the bad, we'll get to this, what happened when he shot the ball there was not good. However, he got there, and that broke down the D and made him, that was helpful. I mean, the results were not great because A, he couldn't finish, and B, he's not the most willing passer, which we'll get to as well in the next segment. But it does have value. Like the joke on Twitter, which it kind of started as a joke, but it's kind of serious. It's like some of Sabonis' gaudy offensive rebounding numbers and some of his good screen and roll numbers come from Tyreek. They had good screen and roll chemistry, and Sabonis is a great roll man no matter who he's with, but you know, that frees up space for Tyreek to get a layup, which he would miss and Sabonis would put back, or, you know, Sabonis could get the ball and the dump off there. They had a good, you know, they had a good fit in that way. I think that's another pro for Tyreek. He's a good pick and roll ball handler, which with that second unit was helpful. It allowed him to, you know, allowed the team to, you know, oh, our possession didn't work. Okay, let's, you know, we have something at the end of the shot clock here with this Tyreek Domas thing that'll get us through enough points, you know, to be competent and keep up with the other team's second unit and often get ahead because Sabonis was so good this year. But everything else, that's where the train stops. I think his three-point shooting was okay, too. He finished just about a league average three-point shooter, I think like 35 or 36%. I should have that number in front of me, but I don't. But, you know, the good thing about what he did with his threes that the team actually needed is he took them off the dribble. I do have this number in front of me. Under 70% of his threes, 68.8%, were assisted. So over 30% of his threes were unassisted, meaning he could take them off the dribble. That just changes the way your man guards you. It creates spacing even when you do have the ball, which is pretty nice. So, yeah, I don't think Tyreek was devoid of good things that he did. I just think, and a lot of this is because it's noticeable. Like, you watch the ball, but a lot of things he did on offense were bad, especially when you watch him a ton. So we will cut to talking about his bad. But first, let me remind you to check out all of our terrific sponsors right now. Untuck It has the best, has the absolute best men's clothing that is untucked. It's like button-ups that aren't awkward when they're untucked, where they have like they don't lie. It doesn't like line up. Does that make sense? It's like a weird shape around your body. I actually have a shirt now. I love it. The untuckit.com/lockedhotels.com, of course, for your travel needs. I believe the code is locked for them as well. And of course, Himalaya. I'm going to preach it till someone tells me they got it and love it. Himalaya. Listen to this podcast on the Himalaya app. Now, we'll take a break and talk about the bad of Tyreek Evans. Do I even bother starting anywhere else than finishing at the rim? I mean, like everybody knows it's coming. It's not a secret. I mean, I think you all know all the things that are coming here, but that's the one that everybody thinks about. 49.2%, less than half of his layups went in. That's horrible. That's atrocious. So this dude, I just say this dude like I'm on like a Stephen A. Smith rant. Tyreek has been in the league, I think, 10 seasons since 2009. Okay? His worst at the he's never been below 50% before this. He's only had one season below 54% before this. Like, where this came from nowhere. Last year in Memphis, 54.4%. It's not like Memphis is some gaudy spacing team. In Sacramento, and I think he liked his coach in Sacramento a lot. That's why he was so good there. Let me phrase it. I heard from people close to him that he liked his coach that he had in Westfall and Sacramento a lot, and that's why he was able to get so much out of him. Anyway, over 60% and 59% his rookie year. That just disappeared. He was so useless around there. It made no sense. It was like a running gag. Like, what was your favorite? I think Caitlin Cooper tweeted, what was your favorite Tyreek Evans missed layup at some point this year? Might not have been Caitlin. I can't remember who that was. I don't want to attribute a name to that. Ignore names. Someone tweeted that, and it was funny. But yeah, he cannot finish at all this year, and it was really painful. He would have been a very deadly player if he could have. I mean, there's a reason his scoring average basically was cut in half from last year to this year. He finished at 10.2, I think, points per game this year, 19 last year. That 10.2 figure, by the way, the lowest of his career. It's pretty wild that a 10-year vet who had a career year last year was able to get a $12 million contract from it, all of a sudden is just like, that's half of his rookie year scoring average. You know, it's just incredible to me that it's fell down so much in that way. And a lot of that comes from his poor finishing at the rim. And even in the mid-range, he was pretty blah. I mean, he wasn't as atrocious from there. You know, 40% from 10 to 16 feet. That's a horribly inefficient shot, but that's like an okay percentage from that distance. But His three-point shot did a ton in keeping his efficiency not cratering. 48.3% true shooting is really bad. I don't want to act like that's even a manageable figure, but his free throw percentage was also the second lowest of his career. So a very inefficient player, but at least he could do some stuff away from the rim. But at the basket, horrible. I already talked about this one in the last section. His team defense is pretty lacking. You know, once the ball's not in his hands, he kind of just turns and, you know, he gets out of his stance and stands up a little higher. So it takes him a bit longer to just like shuffle into the right spot when the ball comes back his way. And all that little stuff matters. There's a reason that, you know, Corey Joseph was considered the guy for defensive guards for the Pacers after Vic went down. Because I think Tyreek had the tools to be that guy, but he's never been that guy because, you know, he's just not great at Team D. And a lot of it in the past, like when he's scoring 19-plus points per game, is like, yeah, okay, you can slack off, but, you know, save some energy away from the ball to be that offensive player that your team needs you to be. When you're not being that offensive player, you're not allowed to take off that time away from the ball on the defensive end. And another thing that frustrated me with him is his passing. Now, his chemistry with Sabonis in the pick and roll was pretty solid. I talked about that already. Pretty much stunk at finding anybody else at any time. You know, in a unit with McDermott, who we all felt like needed more shots, and Thad Young was with him a lot in the dunker spot. It's just like, you got to be able to find. And even when he started for that stretch with Vic was out, and he could never find the right guy. It felt like he wasn't passing as much. So assist percentage, which is like kind of indicative of usage rate, but kind of not. But it's the estimate of the number of field goals made that you assist as a percentage of your full team, right? So if everybody assists the same amount, it'd be 20%. So he's a guard with the ball in his hands a ton, and his assist rate was 17.5%. Easily a career low. He's been well over 20 almost every... No, he's been well over 20 every year of his career but one, and then that 17.5 is just there. Let's go up to per 100 possessions, because those are a little more obvious stats. Assists per 100 possessions. Before this season, look, we have an 8.5, a 7.8, a 10.6, a 10.2, 5.8 this year. So the passing just went way down, just way down. And I don't really know why. I wonder if it was a contract year thing again, but he was passing last year. Maybe the coaching staff was not telling him to pass, which doesn't make any sense because everybody else passes a normal amount. It was very strange how poor of a passer he suddenly became this year. And he got along with all the guys off the court from what I could see. Perhaps there's something that I don't know, but to just be that unwilling of a passer so suddenly, that's so weird. And it was a big hindrance for the team's offense. So I think passing would have helped him a lot to go with that poor finishing and team defense. He became a vastly net negative player. I mean, it was not a secret how bad he was for the team this year. He had some skills that nobody else had with that off the dribble game where he could get to the basket, but yeah, just a net negative. And I think there'll be some addition by subtraction with him not being on that second unit next year. But again, wish him the best in his road to recovery or in whatever stop comes next for him. But now we'll take one more break. We're going to talk about D'Angelo Russell. So remember to check out Himalaya, and then let's go talk about D'Angelo Russell. So let's do some clarity here. Let's start off with clarity. I have been on Twitter saying I would not give D'Angelo Russell a max contract. And people are like, what? Oh my God, you don't want D'Angelo Russell on the Pacers, blah, 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 blah. No, that's not what I said. I said I would not give D'Angelo Russell a max contract. I don't think D'Angelo Russell, you know, there's some analytics people, and I'm pro analytics, but I'm not as like by the book as a lot of the people on that side of the fence are. There are some analytics people who are like, hell no, D'Angelo Russell is bad, or D'Angelo Russell is not an equal player. I totally disagree with that. I think he's good. I think the links to the Pacers make some sense. I just would not give him a max because I think he is limited. I do not think his defense is very good. I do not think he's a great passer, although he definitely improved in that area last year. I think he's exclusively good at creating for himself. He's definitely not a good three-point shooter. He's been about league average or worse every year of his career. A lot of what kept him efficient this past year... And that efficient might even be the wrong word. 53.3% true shooting, still below league average, was good mid-range scoring. 50.4% from 10 to 16 feet. That's extremely good. 10% better than Tyreek. So he's clearly good. You know, he can get to his spot. He knocks down the shot. He was an all-star. There's a lot of things I don't like that make me not want to give him the max. Now, he is good, and I think he would help the Pacers. He'd be the best point guard they've had in forever. And that's why I think he's worth talking about. And I've done a bit of a turn on him. I used to be much more against him than I am now. But I'm doing all the bad first. His free throw rate's really low. 13.5% free throw rate is really low. He's not super awesome at getting to the line. I want to have a Pacers example of what 13.5% is as a free throw rate. Haven't I talked about this on the show before? Am I crazy? I feel like I told Adam and he was like, what? No way, that's right. So sorting the Pacers roster by free throw rate, 13.5% would have been 15th. Lower than McDermott, lower than Leaf, lower than Thad Young. So he never gets to the line, like ever. He is good at getting to his spot. His spot just never happens to be at the rim or the area where players tend to get fouled. So now back to what Russell is good at. That is putting the ball in the basket. His two-point percentage was very good this past year, 48.2%, especially given that pre-discussed shot profile where a lot of it is not at the rim and is more mid-range. You know, I think in a Morey system, obviously his efficiency goes up from taking the right shots, but his percentages go down. And probably his efficiency stays the same, honestly, because he takes more shots he's less comfortable with, but they're more efficient for him. So is that better for him? I don't know. But yeah, he was really pouring it in from some spots last year. And the way the Pacers run their offense, where you know they cater to these shots often, I think he would be a good fit in that way. The passing, like I said, definitely improved in his second year in Brooklyn versus his first year. He got up to 7 assists per game. Now, some of that is he played more minutes. You know, if you go to a rate, like a per 36-minute thing, he only went up by 1 assist over the year before. Same with possessions, he only went up by 1. So he's getting better at that. I don't want to discount that. I still don't think he's a great passer, and he is pretty turnover happy. 5 turnovers per 100 possessions this past year. His turnovers per game was in the 3s, I believe. Yeah, 3.1, so tied with his career high. His turnover rate, 13.6%, is pretty high. That's not like freak out bad. Like that is about the level of Tyreek in terms of turnover rate. So that's like Tyreek turned it over a lot. That's like bad. It's not helpful. But he's a quality offense. He was still a very good offensive player. He was, you know, he probably was like 1 or 2 spots below an all-star to me, but he's still that level of player. He was an all-star, close to an all-star level player. So I think he's good, and he would be a good fit for the Pacers at the point guard spot because of these things. He can put the ball in the basket and score points for the team. That's something that the offense needs. He can pass. I think he fits well next to Vic in that he doesn't need the ball all the time. You know, his usage wasn't super high. He's fit well with Dinwiddie. His usage wasn't super high. I take that back. He fit well with Dinwiddie as an off-ball guard when he needed to. So, yeah, I think he would help. And I regret being so cavalier saying no, absolutely not. But I'm still firmly no max contract. Now, let me backpedal on my own opinion of what he's worth. For the Pacers to get him, for the Pacers to actually be able to sign him, it would take a max because, one, Indiana tax is add some money to what they would normally get, something like 20% to market value. And two, he's a restricted free agent, which they never chase those guys ever. And so the Nets will probably match anything with him. Like, he was the all-star they've had. Their rebuild's been so long. They finally were good and made the playoffs this year. They're going to do whatever they can to keep this guy. Unless, like we talked about on Monday's show, they get Kyrie and KD or Kyrie and who, you know, Kyrie's been linked to them recently. So if they do get someone else, then yeah, all of a sudden, okay, D'Lo is on the market again. So there is a way, there is a chance. I don't think it's zero like with other restricted free agents because of other factors, but I think it would take the max for the Pacers to be able to pry him away from Brooklyn. So yeah, I'll have to see how that experiment goes. But I do think he'd be a good fit with Vic, which is very important. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on the situation. This was 6'5". Just a big deal. Yeah. So yeah, that's one more from Louisville, Midwest guy. Gotta love it. So yeah, keep up with the links on that. The rumors are piling up. There was a nice picture of him with Bojan at the Champions League final. Again, if you listen to Monday's show, you already heard a lot of this. So keep an eye on all the D'Lo stuff, and I will, of course, keep you updated on Twitter at TEastNBA, where I also retweet all of our podcasts. Although you should still follow Locked On Pacers at Locked On Pacers to see episodes as we tweet them out in the morning every day they come out. Thank you guys for tuning in today. Well, Adam is here on Friday to talk, I believe, Corey Joseph, but I could be wrong about that. So stick around for that. Thank you guys for listening, and have a wonderful Wednesday.